Good afternoon, or morning. Good morning. So today we're going to start talking about C++, since you're going to have to use it, starting with the first lab next week. First, some logistic notes. If you're enrolled in lecture, you should have CoLab access. That wasn't true when I said that Wednesday, but was true shortly after. There's a link on the side panel of CoLab with instructions for setting up the Git repo if you don't remember anything from the first lecture about how to do that or how to find the website for it. So that's there. If you're on the wait list, like many people are, so if your problem is getting into this lecture, I can fix that. But I don't think that's anyone's problem. I think everyone's problem is getting into the appropriate lab. I am not the instructor of record for the lab, so I just can't enter your computing ID on SIS and give you permission to register, and I can't sign a course action form for the labs. So Florian's the one who's going to decide how to deal with that. We're trying to add another lab, but it's not going to make any promises. Okay, so that out of the way, let's talk about C++. So last time I mentioned we're using C++ in this class, and there's two big reasons for it. So one is that it's going to make it easier for us to talk about data representation. So C++ is, in some sense, as typically implemented, closer to the hardware than Java is. There's less layers of abstraction between what happens to Java code when it runs on your machine versus what happens to C++ code when it runs on your machine. Closer to what the physical hardware is doing. And this is going to make it easier to talk about how objects are represented, which is a big topic in this course. And it's going to make it easier to talk about how your code gets translated into something the physical hardware can understand. It's also, as I mentioned last time, heavily related to Java, because Java was designed at a time when C++ was the dominant language in industrial use, and therefore was basically trying to be a C++ but with all the things fixed. That was sort of one of the big philosophies behind Java. So since I'm talking about history, some history. So C++ is derived from C. And C is a really old programming language. So the original version of C, which is often called KNRC, because there's a book by Kernighan and Ritchie, which describes it, was published in 1972, the first version. And it was based on an earlier language from 1967, which looks pretty different, called BCPL. And C was sort of designed to be efficient to make compilers for, and it makes a lot of decisions that you wouldn't make anymore. But it's the basis of most of the programming languages you've probably used. Unless you've used a Lisp-like language, most of the programming languages you've used are probably made by people who were copying C in some way. It's very influential for that reason. It's the language which dominated Unix. It sort of was the definition of what a Unix system was that you wrote everything in C. It was written for Unix. And Unix in the 70s and 80s was the OS you would use if you had a server or workstation, with a few exceptions of OSs you've never heard of, like VMS. So someone else at the same place where C was developed, Bell Labs, wanted to add object orientation to C. So object-oriented programming was older than the late 70s. There's some earlier languages like Simula and Smalltalk, which had object orientation. And Jørn Sestrup wanted something where he could take advantage of the things C was good at. So C was good at producing relatively efficient code at the time. And letting you do things that were close to the hardware when you wanted to, but you wanted to have object-oriented programming on that. So he made C with classes. And this became C++. And sort of the earliest thing called C++ was from around 85. It looks pretty similar to the C++ you use today. So C++ currently is defined by a standard. So some people at ANSI, the American National Standards Institute, and ISO, the International Standards Organization, have a committee where they decide what is C++. This means that there are multiple C++ compilers and they all agree on what the language is supposed to be. This also means that what's in C++ is a bit quirky because you have design by committee, you know. And you're not always doing things the way that each implementation might prefer. There's lots of compromises and lots of controversy. And you can kind of guess that based on that we started standardizing C++ in 1989, and the first version of the standard was published in 98. So they spent 9 years making changes and all that stuff. They got the first version. There were drafts before that, and most C++ compilers in the early 90s were kind of getting closer and closer to the standard from things they did beforehand. And it's still being actively updated. So there's been a versions published in this decade. We're going to describe a version where we're not going to care about features that have changed in recent standards. But you should know that if you like go industrially, that the style of C++ you see might be very different than you see in this class. Partly because of new features in the standards, and partly because C++ is a huge language. So the standard is like 2,000-ish pages. No one uses all of it. And we're only going to be teaching what we think is a useful subset. You might work someplace where they have a different idea about what the useful subset is. So there's some reasons why you might not like C++. So C++ makes some not great syntax choices. This is most notably in how variables of pointer types and array types are declared. This is like really not intuitive. You should not feel bad that it doesn't make sense. Yes, it was a bad decision, mostly because it's based on C. And C++ makes these compromises for compatibility. So the original version of C++ was meant to be like actually compatible with C. Current C++ no longer is in a way such that if you like have a C program and try to compile it as C++, most of the time it won't, if you have a large C program. But it's sort of designed to look like C, and it has a lot of limitations because of those decisions. And as I said earlier, we're teaching, you know, a subset of it. There's a lot of features that we will just never talk about. Yes?
Where does C# come into line, like C++ and C#?
So the question is, how is C# related to all these? So C# was developed after Java. And is another language in the family of Java, where they looked at C++ as the sort of dominant language and wanted to make something that's kind of like it, but better. And they also had Java at the time, so they wanted to make something that's also, you know, related to Java, but better. A lot of languages which don't have C in their name are also very C-like. Like if you know braces around method, around if statements and things like that, that's all stuff that comes from C. You see any language like that, it's probably based on C in some major way. So let's do our standard example of Hello World. So this is a C++ Hello World program. We have a whole bunch of strange things going on here. There's quite a bit of boilerplate here. This is not like Python where you just write print hello world. It's not quite as bad as Java. Like I didn't need to define a class, I did something else. It's still pretty enough. So the first thing you'll notice is that we have something which looks like a method, but it's not associated with any class. So in C++, this is going to be called a function. This is a function at global scope, we'll say, because it's global outside of any class. And main is a special name for one, and that's where our program's going to start. Unlike Java, you don't choose a class to start. When you compile your program, there has to be one main function, and that's where the program's going to start. You'll have a separate file with the main function typically, and you'll make sure you compile that into when you make your executable program only. So you notice that it has a return type of int. It always has a return type of int. Some compilers might let you get away with having a return type of void, but that is not correct. And you might sometimes get in trouble. In this class, we will always, always return zero from main. Yes, there are reasons why real programs would do something else, but in this class, we will never have a reason to do anything but return zero. And we always should return because it's a function which needs a value to return, so we're always going to return zero. So you have this directive here, using namespace standard. So this is kind of like import in Java. So this is sort of almost equivalent to if you imagine doing import standard dot star. Like that's sort of what the equivalent would be in Java. So there are some things from the standard namespace that we want that aren't going to be imported by default. Unlike Java, there's not like something special like java.lang in C++, which is always in your namespace. The standard library generally is not imported into your namespace by default at all. So we could, just like in Java, instead of writing a using directive like that, we could have just explicitly said which things from the standard library we're using. In this case, cout and endl are both names from the standard namespace in the standard library that we're trying to use. And the syntax for that uses double colons, not dots. So that's how we say, I want part of a namespace. So any questions so far? Yeah.
Will we ever need to use the double colons or are you showing
us? Will you ever need to use the double colons? Probably. At some point it will come up. Yes.
So is that like for mainly like just saving space or getting a more exact result?
So is what, the double colons?
Yeah, double colons.
So why would you use double colons instead of using namespace? So there's two issues. So one is that you might want to use a particular thing. So if you do using namespace standard, which is typically what we'll do in this course, but in the real world, you don't know everything that's in the standard library, and maybe you have a function called foo, and does the standard library define another function called foo? When you write foo, which one's going to be called? You might not want to think about that stuff, so often in production code, you'll see them only want to do things like this, where they use particular names so they know exactly where things are coming from, so they know that they're not accidentally calling something in the standard library instead of the version of the thing they defined. In this class, we will typically just let you do using namespace standard because we don't care so much about that program. We're not writing big enough programs where you're likely to get in trouble from accidentally choosing a name that's the same as the standard library. But in real code, you'll see this. You also would need to do this explicitly if for some reason, you had something called cout that you defined and you also wanted to use the thing from the standard library. This syntax will let you do that. So we also, in addition to having a namespace, we have this include thing, which also kind of acts like import, so that's a bit confusing. So why do we have two things for the import? So this says, I want the IOStream library, and IOStream, this is the standard IO input output streams. That's what that stands for. This says, I want to use that library. If you don't specify that, if you just write using namespace standard, the compiler is not going to know that cout exists. So you have to have this include directive to say, yes, there's the, please load the information about the standard IOStreams library when you're compiling this file. If not, the compiler is not going to search for it. This is unlike what you're used to in Java. So in Java, you're used to, you write the name bar, and the Java compiler is going to look for the appropriate file. It's going to look for bar.java or bar.class. This does not happen in C++. The C++ compiler is much simpler about how it looks for files. You have to tell it, here is the file you need to look in. And you have to have everything that you're using declared in files you've told the compiler to look in. So unlike in Java, where you just have the appropriate hierarchy, in C++, no matter whether you're following the normal convention of where you put classes and so on, you need to tell the compiler, hey, I'd like you to load these, for example, in this case, the IOStream class declaration so I can use them. If you don't do that, it's not going to find it for you. It's just going to say, these aren't declared anywhere. I don't know about them. Even if you use the namespace that they would have been defined in if you include them. And there's this general rule in C++ that, unlike in Java, you have to declare things before you use them. So in the C++ compiler is processing each file in order. So it's going to go through your file in order, and when it sees something, and it hasn't seen a declaration of it. So for example, if you're calling a function foo, and it hasn't seen anything telling it what the function foo is, like what types of arguments does it take, what's its return value, it's going to say, sorry, I don't know what you're talking about. It doesn't care that later on in the file, you've defined the function foo. It's not going to look that far. It's going to be stupider than that. And so what exactly is a declaration? So here's an example of dealing with this problem and still having mutually recursive functions. So here I have an odd function, which calls an even function, and an even function, which calls the odd function. And here I'm using the name even. And if I didn't have this this first line here, then it would be the case that this line here that says bool even number, then I would get a compile error. The compiler would say, hey, I don't know what even is. I can't let you do that. Compiler would not look ahead and figure out, oh, even is right, it's right there. I can see it. And this here is called a declaration or a function prototype. So it's a prototype. It tells you what the function is supposed to do, kind of like a prototype. That's the name. That's a vocab term you should remember. I'm not sure it's the most logical term, but it's used ubiquitously whenever people talk about this sort of declaration, saying there is a function called this, but it doesn't actually give the code for the function. It just says, there's a function like this. It's defined somewhere. And later on, we have the actual definition of the function, thing which has its implementation. And that also acts as another declaration of the function. So if we didn't declare it before, it would be considered declared and therefore usable after this. So any questions about any part of this example? Okay. And you might see this in other cases. So here, I could have organized this file. So I just move this definition of int max before it's used. But a common convention you will often see is just having prototypes for all our functions at the beginning of a file or something that where we're using them or something like that, and then using them later on and not worrying about where exactly we order the functions. That's something you might want to do to avoid, you know, getting these spurious errors and trying to reorder your functions so they make sense. So the general syntax is you just have your return type, your function name, and your list of arguments. It looks just like it would when you're defining the implementation, except you have a semicolon at the end instead of actual code for the function, instead of open brace, code, close brace. So that's prototype. So another thing you might want to do is have your functions in separate files. And a problem for this is that C++ compilers process each file separately. So when you ask a file some C++ file, it reads that file and things that file says to do, but it doesn't pay attention to the other files you're compiling as part of this program. So this means that if I want to use my even function from another file, then I still need a declaration that's somehow visible in the file I'm using it from. So here I have even dots, that should be CPP. Even dot CPP, which has a declaration of, which has a definition of the even function. So fairly straightforward. And I want to use that from main.cpp. But the compiler is going to process each of these two files independently. So I need this declaration here. I use the keyword extern to say it's not in this file. It might not be in this file. And that says there's a function called even, which returns a bool and takes an int, and you should expect to find it when you produce the executable. Yes?
When it calls the other file, does it parse and compile that one before it goes back to the other one? Or do they do it at the same time? Or
so the question is, when it calls the other file, is that when it parses and compiles the file? So no. The way we're going to work in C++ is we're going to compile each of our C++ files to something we call an object file. So this is a format where most of the compilation is done, but we haven't dealt with things like you're calling a function in another file. So then there's a second step called linking, where we're going to take all these object files we produce from each C++ file and deal with the cases where one file calls another and produce an executable that you can actually run directly. So there's this two-step system. The idea of that is that, let's say my main doesn't look like this, but has like 100,000 lines of code. This means that if I change my even.c, C++, CPP, I can just recompile that and do the last step, which will be a lot faster than recompiling my 100,000 line main.cpp. Okay. So this seems a little bit annoying because, well, there's probably a lot of places I want to use the even function from, and what if I change some details about it? You know, do I have to copy and paste this code everywhere? And C++ has a mechanism for this called header files, which is what this pound include thing is about. So the idea of a header file is that you make a header file, which conventionally has the extension .h, and that is read when the pound include statement says so. So this pound include even.h says, please read at this point from even.h. And the compiler literally acts as if you copied and pasted the contents of even.h into the CPP file. Yes.
So you can't just put methods in even.h and have it read the method?
So the question is, why don't we just put the method definition in even.h? So this is something that sometimes works. So there's some problems with this. So let's say we have a main.cpp and an other.cpp. And they both include an even with ample.h. So if we compile these both into main.o and other.o, this will, main.o will contain code for even, and other.o will contain code for even. And then later on, when we want to combine these into an executable, the question is, which version of even do we use? Right? There's two versions. We know they're the same, but maybe we change even with ample.h and they're slightly different, or maybe the compiler, we used different, slightly different compiler options or something like that. So we would need to choose a version, and C++'s solution to this problem is that this is an error. The compiler won't choose a version of it. It will just say, sorry, you have two copies of even. I'm not going to bother figuring out if they're the same. I'm not going to figure out which one to use. I'm not going to let you do this. Just fix it. Have only one copy when you're trying me to make an executable. So that's the reason why we don't have it in there. There is a way around this called the inline keyword, where you basically promise really, really hard that you're not going to have the two copies be different. But that's typically not something we'll use. The other problem with this is that because we have two copies of the code for even, we're doing more work in compiling. And if this wasn't even but some more complicated function, we'd be producing the code for it twice, and that's going to be a lot slower. And if you have like a software project with like 1,000 files, that would be very disappointing, because when people have done things like this, they often get software projects where it takes like literally over an hour or two to compile, which is something we'd like to avoid. Yeah?
What is the difference between even.h or even.c?
So the difference is just the content, so including just copies and paste. So if we included even.c, we would get this code here as if it was in that file. So this is just like if we copied and pasted this at the top of main. So if this is the only place we were using even, that would work fine. But if we try to compile a main and even together, if we were including even.cpp, we'd have two copies of the definition of even. But by having this even.h, we don't worry about that, because this is only the declaration. And as long as we include every CPP file and we always have the definitions in the CPP file, we just follow this convention, we don't have to worry about that. Yeah?
Okay. So using even.h, we've declared that even exists externally.
Yeah.
How does it know where to find it? Do we just promise really hard that we've only declared one even function in all?
The question is, how does it know where to find it? So when we produce this final executable, when we do this step here where we take our two object files, it's going to look at all the functions you're trying to use and all the function definitions, and it's going to try to match them up. And if one is missing, it's going to give you an error.
Okay.
So we'll get an error. So if we, let's say we included even.h and compiled main.cpp and didn't compile even.cpp. even.c into the executable and said, make an executable from this. Then you get an error which would read something like undefined symbol even.
Okay.
Telling you that you missed the definition of even.
We expressly choose what we compile together. It's not like it just compiles everything.
Yes. So unlike Java, we are always going to say exactly what files go in our executable.
Okay.
And this happens at every step, both when we choose what top-level files to compile and put in the executable, and within those files, what libraries to load the declarations of, which we're doing with this pound include mechanism. Yes?
So if you had a bunch of different functions in your even.c file, would you have to have a separate call even.h to each separate function?
So the question is, if even.c just didn't have even, but had a whole other bunch of functions, would I have more declarations in even.h? Absolutely. So the convention we'll have is that for every CPP file, we'll have an .h file with declarations for every single function in it that might be used by another file. Yes?
Would that CPP file then generally call its own header file so that it doesn't have any issues with the order of compilation?
The question is, would that CPP file call its own header file? Usually, yes. And it would include it, both because for the same reason we did it here, right? Because it prevents, means that if we include our own header file, it's going to contain this for us. And so typically the convention is you'll do that. You don't have to. But typically the convention is it will include it. Also, this means that you'll get a compile error if for some reason this declaration here and this definition disagreed, which is probably something you want to know about. Or you'll usually get a compile error. Unfortunately, it's actually not the case that you'll get a compile error as often as you might think. So any other questions about this idea of header files and pound include?
What is the file extension
.c? It should be .cpp, I'm sorry.
Oh, okay.
I have C on the mind. That's the file extension for C, which I'm using in 3330, so. Okay. And you may notice that this pound include syntax is the same thing we did to add the IOStream library. And generally, it works the same way. So there's some file called IOStream with no extension somewhere, which has definitions of things like cout and so on. And that needs to be there so the compiler knows, oh, cout is a thing that exists. I'm omitting lots of details here, like there's not actually a class OStream, it's called something else, and there's more indirection there, and of course I'm missing where standard come from. So there's something which says this is all in the standard namespace. Yes?
Is extern just meaning that include?
So extern means it's not declared in this file.
Okay.
It's not, extern means this is only a declaration of it, it's not defined in this file, I should say. Just declared in this file, not defined. Yeah?
Will it just search every other file in the executable for the function?
So the question is, will it search every other file in the executable? When you produce the executable, it will look through all the object files for the function. And for that function. Or the same thing is true here. It will look through all the other files for the global variable, which is what this is, cout. So header files, they contain declarations mostly. If you look at real header files, you might see some cases where there's definitions of things and some other things we might talk about later. But mostly they contain declarations. This is not because you'll get an error if you put a definition in one, this is convention. the convention, and we strongly recommend you follow. And this is an alternative to adding prototypes, to adding these declarations to every file to say, hey, there's a function called even somewhere, hey, there's a function called, foo somewhere to every file. And our convention is that every time you make a .cpp file, you should make a .h file if you intend to use that .cpp file from another cpp file. And as I mentioned earlier, the way that this gets used is that we have our multiple files, so we take main.cpp, we compile it into this object file. And when we compile it, we tell the compiler, you're compiling main.cpp, and because we have a pound includes in the file, the compiler will follow those instructions to read even.h and iostream and so on. And we also tell the compiler here, compile even.cpp to even.o. And then we have another step where we link into create our executable. And typically, you'll link your .o files, and your compiler will helpfully link in things like wherever iostream code is. So someone in advance took the code that implements cout and produced this one of these object files from it, and the compiler will use that when it's producing your executable unless you tell it, please do not include, give me a standard library, I don't want to use cout. And this produces the executable. And each of these has a command you can run. So the process of compiling one file can be done, we're going to use the compiler Clang++. There are other C++ compilers out there that usually follow the same convention roughly. And this dash C option is the option for only produce an object file, only compile. And we can do the same thing for even.cpp. And then we can take those object files and combine them with another command to the compiler into an executable. And I didn't specify iostream.o because the compiler assumes, unless we tell it otherwise, that we want to include all the standard library stuff in our executable. And most commonly, you'll do something like this. You'll say, C++ compiler, make an executable from these two CPP files, from these two source files. And what that's actually going to do is it's going to do all these steps for you. It's just not going to show you these intermediate O.O files. But it's actually going to do each of those steps. So that command runs internally the dash C command for main.cpp and even.cpp, and then runs the final command to combine them. So it still does it file by file, even though you're doing it all in one command. This is just a shorthand, so you don't have to type three commands. So any questions about any of this process? So you may notice we're using Clang++. This is our compiler of choice on lab machines and the VM. It's better than the version of G++, which is the other notable choice we could have made, and that's a perfectly reasonable compiler to use on the lab machines, mostly because it gives better error messages. So more recent versions of G++ are catching up to Clang, and probably about up there. But not the versions we have on our VM or on our lab machines. So we recommend using Clang++ so you get nice readable error messages. And speaking of error messages, I'd like to make a note about compiler warnings. So here's some C++ code. So you may notice there's a bit of a problem there. And I've declared this variable bad, and I'm not doing anything with it. This is not an error. I can declare whatever variables I want and not do things with them. But you'd probably like to know that you're doing this. You're probably used to maybe Java telling you about this. It would be nice to know. And by default, if you just compile something with our compiler, it's going to say, great, done. Because it's valid to have a variable you don't use. But there is an option you can pass. There's several options, but the most notable is -wall, capital W, which will give more warning. So in this case, it says unused variable bad, right there. So I would recommend using this so you can find out if there are easy for the compiler to figure out things that might be wrong with your C++ code. Yes? Dash C, so this means, so the question is what does dash C mean versus dash O? So let's do a brief tutorial on options. So dash C is make object file. If you don't specify dash C, the default is to make an executable file. And I didn't do that on this file here because if I tried to make an executable from it, the compiler is going to say, hey, where's main? Because there's no main. Dash O name means output to name. So when I had dash show main.exe, I meant the output file I want you to produce is called main.exe rather than the default. And this can apply for dash C, so you can use dash C and dash O like main.o or something like that. It just says this is the output file I want for whatever type of thing I'm having you do. There's also, you may see a dash capital O, which means optimize, which means try to make my code fast, which is not the same as lowercase O. Yes?
Does the wall have to have a capital W?
Does the wall have to have a capital W? Yes. So the capital W stands for warnings, and you think therefore all means all warnings, and that's a thing a lot of people think, and for some reason, it's not actually all warnings, but it's most warnings. So if there are some additional options which will give you more warnings than the all warnings options, because maybe the idea of having a flag that everyone would use to turn in all warnings was not so good when you implemented some warnings that are very annoying for typical code. Yeah.
Is that a capital case O or a zero?
This is a capital O. I will try to write zeros like this. Any questions on this? Okay, so we've seen inputting and outputting thing. Outputting things. I'm going to also show you briefly the simplest way to input things. So IOStream has something called cin in addition to cout. And just like we have the arrows pointing to cout to output things, we can have arrows pointing away from cin to input things. So this is the simplest way to do input and output. There's obviously considerably more features. So these are both global variables that are of the iStream and OStream type. So you might find cases where you can get other ones, like if you were doing file I/O, there's a way of doing that. There are other input and output functions, like there's one too, like if you want to read a whole line and things like that. We're mostly not going to need to deal with that in this class. We'll talk about it when we get there. But this is enough so you can now write simple programs that actually read input and write output. What does endl stand for is the question. And this is end line. So this is almost the same as writing that, writing an explicit new line. It's not quite the same because it ensures that the output is flushed. Have people heard about flushing output in 2110? Is that a thing that's covered? Okay, so C++ doesn't always output what you tell it to output immediately for speed reasons. Endl ensures that regardless of what's happening, it will always output immediately, which sometimes matters. Okay, so that's basic I/O, and let's talk about types. So here are very basic types in C++. These should seem mostly familiar. I'm going to talk mostly about the cases where they are notably different from Java. And the first thing that is notably different from Java is char. So in Java, it has chars. You're used to those. Chars in C++ are not the same as Java chars. So in Java, a character is essentially a 16-bit number that represents a Unicode 2-byte encoding code pointer surrogate. In C++, chars are 8 bits. So ASCII, typically not Unicode. If you do Unicode, you have to do something different than what Java does. And they're actually integers. They are actually integers in a strong sense in that, except in like the input-output functions, they act exactly like integers. You can add and subtract from them. You can divide and multiply them, just like integers. They're just very small integers. We have short, int, and long. And unlike Java, the size of these can vary between machines. So on my laptop, a short is 2 bytes, an int is 4 bytes, and a long is 8 bytes. If I had a C compiler for my phone, most likely a short would be 2 bytes, an int would be 4 bytes, and a long would be 4 bytes. Question is, are there options in the compilers to change the number of bytes? Sometimes, but not always. So it's usually the an OS decides we're going to use a particular set of sizes, and you kind of have to do this because the OS has some libraries where they have like int open file, long size or something like that, and if the size of that long changes, that's not very good. So this varies between machines. We'll have a particular size in our machines, but you might experience systems, especially if they're very small systems, where it's different, maybe. So float and double, they work basically the same as in Java. And then we have bool. And yes, it is not Boolean. No, I don't know why C++ decided to do that. So another kind of types that are in C++ are unsigned types. So there's an unsigned int, an unsigned long, an unsigned short, there's even an unsigned char. Because I remember characters are just integers. And these are like their corresponding integer, the normal integer type, but they can only have positive values. And as a consequence of this, they get to hold slightly larger values than a normal int would hold. There are also, you can also write signed int, which is the same as int and signed, long and so on. If you want to, it's the same thing as those types, except for care, it might actually be different. I'm not sure how it works in our machines. Okay, and I think that's what I have time for today. So next time, we'll talk about what classes look like in C++. And you should probably look at the pre-lab, maybe before next time, if not sometime after lecture in the morning.